What's up, everyone? This is the Next Take Podcast, episode 24 with Cal
and Tanika.
Where we have a conversation on a different topic. So, we're almost like a week away from spring. And,
oh, yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Am I ready? Well, I'm done with winter, so I'm always done with winter.
Cool. Yeah, I've done winter too. Too many cold months these last like several months. Even though spring for us is like in basically in May, it doesn't start until like May for us.
Well, let's be a little more optimistic and say kind of in April, but then sometimes winter says, "Hello, I'm still here." It's usually how it goes.
Yeah. Well, so what are we talking about today, Tanika?
So today we're going to have a little bit of a fun episode. We're going to be kind of talking Broadway a little bit, but in particular, my main focus with this particular episode is going to be Hamilton and kind of talking more about the people that we see come out of that show. But
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Michael's gonna be
Let's get on with it. Yeah, I'm gonna be listening today, guys. Not a lot of talking film for me.
Yeah.
All right.
First and foremost, Broadway. What is it? Where did it come from? Who started it? All of that. So we're going to do quick little, honestly, very quick, like a 2-minute history lesson on Broadway. So the term Broadway can be traced back to the opening of the first theater in New York in 1735. So the growth of Broadway was temporarily stalled, however, due to the Revolutionary War, which I think that's pretty self-explanatory, but shows resumed after the war ended. Many musicals were inspired by the vaudeville shows of the 1890s and early 1900s. So, who kind of came up with the idea of Broadway? From my research, it's this man named George M. Cohan who kind of started it. He's kind of known as the man who created Broadway, and it was an anthem, or was an anthem machine. I think that's what they're trying to say. He kind of was, but there actually is a statue of George M. Cohan.
It's just like a musical or a play.
He acted in Broadway.
Mm.
And he kind of created, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, like he's kind of like, I don't know how to describe him otherwise, but like there is a statue of him in New York's Times Square. If you're interested in seeing the statue, I'm gonna do this. So, Mikkel, have you ever been to a Broadway show or any kind of show? Not necessarily Broadway, but any sort of stage show.
Not really. I haven't been to any type of stage show at all in my whole entire life.
Really?
Sad, but I have to see something close to Broadway.
Yeah, there's lots to choose from that's not necessarily Broadway. Like, again, Broadway is a term coined based on the fact that there is a street called Broadway in New York where all of the shows were kind of on. Of course, these shows will go on tours and whatever. But there's also like off-Broadway shows that are, you know, not as expensive because the budgets are a little lower. Yeah, there's a lot to choose from. But I mean, I think everyone should at least try at least once. There are all kinds of different shows. It doesn't have to be like a musical, like Hamilton is strictly a musical. But I've seen a few shows. My mom's taken me since I was little to different shows because she herself has seen like Phantom of the Opera, which I'm so jealous of. I really wanted to see Phantom of the Opera. Unfortunately, it's no longer on Broadway, but anyway. She's seen Cats. I have seen Beauty and the Beast when it was on Broadway. I've seen The Lion King, which is in... I remember that show. It was incredible. Mamma Mia.
Yeah, the show. Yep.
The show was really good. I've seen Mamma Mia.
So all of these are from like New York, or are they just like from close?
I'm not sure about
downtown Toronto.
Well, I never seen any of the shows in New York. I saw them when they were here in Toronto. But in this case, they would have traveled. Lion King started in New York, I believe on Broadway. And it traveled and it came here. And it's been here since even then. Mamma Mia, I think the same thing too. But yeah, I saw those shows. And I actually haven't seen, like, I've seen stage shows since Mamma Mia, but I haven't seen like a huge show like that since Mamma Mia, which I was roughly 12, I think, when I saw that. And yeah, because there hasn't been a lot of shows that I've been interested in seeing, except for when Hamilton came around. And you kind of heard the rumblings of Hamilton, and you're just like, this sounds like it's going to be really good. I want to see this. I want to see this show. And I kid you not, when it came to Toronto, me and my mom were like, oh my God, Hamilton's here. We have to go see it. And this was before the pandemic hit. And I think it was actually like that same year. It was coming that same year, 2020. And we're like, oh, we gotta see it. And price is ridiculous, but we were like, oh, we probably can't see it because it's too expensive. But then the pandemic hit. So nobody was seeing the show anyways. And it was here longer due to the fact that it got hit by the pandemic when it came. It was here a lot longer than it was supposed to. And we didn't think we were going to see it at all until we had a family member offer to pay for us to go, and we got to see it. And it's an incredible show. If anyone is not, do you have something you want to say?
So if like anybody wants to go to like, you know, any type of like Broadway show, are these Broadway shows like expensive? Are they cheap?
You can get, so basically with again, depending, like a show like Hamilton, because it's on Broadway, is going to be more expensive. A show that's off Broadway is not going to be as expensive. But there are different levels. You have orchestra, which is the main level, the ground level. You have mezzanine, and then you have a balcony, and then there's another balcony.
Right.
So the higher up you're going, the cheaper you're going to pay. So if you want a cheap ticket, balcony for you. If you can afford to go a little more, maybe you can afford the orchestra. But even the orchestra, there are levels. The closer you are to the stage, the more expensive it is. I can't remember how much we paid for these tickets. We were on orchestra, but I think both of us together was just under $400.
Okay.
For two people.
What I'm seeing on Broadway.com right now, the Wicked, and then I've seen the Lion King, like you said.
Mm. But are you looking? If you're looking at Toronto, again, I'm going based on Toronto prices. Yeah. You should be looking at Mirvish, not Broadway. All of the Broadway shows are sold through Mirvish.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's probably in America then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're going to be on Canadian prices, it's Mirvish.com mm-hmm. that you go to, and it has everything there. Doesn't matter the venue, doesn't matter anything like that. Everything will be there. What I will say about Hamilton, just in generally speaking, my boss actually went to go see this show right before, like, probably about a month or so before I did. And I remember him kind of coming up to me, kind of being like, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna go see Hamilton tonight, which I was very jealous of, because at this point we did not know we were going, right? So he hadn't talked about it, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm so jealous. And he's like, I'm not interested, like, I don't really like musicals, I don't really like these kinds of things, it's not really my thing. When I saw him next and he had seen it, he came to me and he said, I actually really enjoyed it. The music was modern. It's kind of more of like an R&B, hip-hop feel to some of the music. There's even like rap battles. There's rap battles in the show, which makes it very fun. Makes it obviously very modern. And I think like this is a kind of show that even if you don't like musicals, or if you don't like history but you like music or whatever, there's something for everyone with the show. There's comedy, there's heart, and it comes out like with a message, which I think is really important. So I would say to anybody who doesn't like musicals, because even me, when I first saw the show, I'm like, oh, they're going to be singing through the whole thing, because I don't like a musical that doesn't have speaking in it too. I need a little bit of that reprieve. But I didn't care with Hamilton. I didn't need the reprieve. And I think like anyone should watch the show if they have access to it. Whether that is watching it on stage, watching it on Disney Plus, whatever. It's so good. And even if you watch it on stage, still go back and watch it on Disney Plus if you have access to it, because the original cast is incredible. Some of the original cast I did see when I saw the show, which I'll talk about a little bit as we go through, but they were incredible, and they were my favorites, actually. The people who were the original cast, they're freaking incredible. It was an incredible show. Maybe I'm biased, but whatever. But anyway, with Hamilton, though, kind of listening to the cast, especially Lin-Manuel Miranda, who plays Hamilton, or originally played Hamilton, he really does stress of, yes, enjoy the show, that's great, but do your research on these people. Learn a little bit more about what really happened, because there's so much more to the show than, or so much more to the story and these people's lives than what is portrayed on the show. So that's kind of where I'm coming in. Now, before we get into this, I'm going to keep as much of it short as I can. We are going to be doing what I'm kind of calling like a series next year, kind of really diving into some of these people, because I think they deserve it. They deserve to be highlighted more than they were in life and even on the show. So we'll kind of talk about that and talk about the fun parts of the show too. So Ready to get into it? let's get into it.
Yeah. Well, what I want to do is, like, you know, if you want to go through any type of way, guys, Mervish, like you said, .com. Mm. They also have an app, as I'm seeing right now. So that's Mervish with an MIRVISH .com. And then search for the app. If you just scroll down, just click on one of the links below, and to the app looks like the only. Oh yeah, no, they're available on Apple Store and Android. So like, just click on it, check it out, see what you're interested into. So I don't see Hamilton anywhere.
No, Hamilton's gone now.
Okay.
Yeah, because they don't say, right? Hamilton is left in August. I saw the second last show, actually, that they did here in Toronto. I believe currently going to be traveling to, I think, somewhere in Texas. Is it Austin? Dallas? They're traveling somewhere in the States. So,
right.
We'll take a look.
Okay, we'll have everything in the description. Links will be in there.
And again,
okay,
all right. Honestly, again, if you want to watch Hamilton, but you're not, it's not anywhere near you, Disney Plus. Disney Plus, it is there. Right. It's not going anywhere. You can watch it there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go, guys. You have options. Go ahead.
Okay. So, one of the people that we kind of see on the show, his name is Marquis de Lafayette. He's really like a huge figure, even more. I never heard of him before. This is what's so amazing about Hamilton, actually. I just never heard of him before. But he was a man from France who really helped with the American Revolution. I don't think they would have succeeded without the aid of him, and in turn the aid of France. So a little history on him. So he's born on September 6th, 1757, I want to butcher this, Chateau de Chavanquiac, sure, in France. And he died on May 20th, 1834. He was 76. And he's got a shit ton of kids. He was married up until 1807, actually. So he divorced his wife before he passed away. And if you're curious to know, this guy has a long freaking name. His full name is Marie-Joseph Paul-Yves Roche Gilbert de Mathieu de la Lafayette. Long fucking name, which is why he shortened it, I think. But anyways. So, as mentioned, he was a French aristocrat who... Crat, sorry. Did I say aristocrat? Like the freaking Disney movie?
I think you did.
Because I'm a lady, that's why. Okay, so... he was a French aristocrat who... I did it again. You know what? It's fun. Who fought in the Continental Army.
Is it aristocrat?
It's aristocrat. I keep saying aristocrat.
Okay.
Jesus. Anyway.
You're getting flashback on those cat...
Listen, that was my favorite movie. Thomas O'Malley? Come on. My favorite movie is a kid. So he fought in the Continental Army with the American colonists against the British in the Revolutionary War, as mentioned. He was later a leading advocate for constitutional monarchy, and he became one of the most powerful men in France during the first few years of the French Revolution and during the July Revolution of 1830. So if that didn't make any sense, he actually advocated for a monarchy, the French monarchy, which is actually really interesting because he helped in the American Revolution to not have British a part of, like, have any part of America, in turn, the monarchy. So it's It's really interesting, but he actually tried to protect the French monarch, which didn't go good. But we'll get to that in a little bit, because I probably have not mentioned who that is yet at that time. If you've watched the show, though, you know who the monarch was at the time in France. So, yeah. Let me go past a little bit here, so I'm not going into everything. So, he was born in France, whatever. Then he decided, once he was the age to do so, kind of around the same age as Alexander Hamilton, actually. They're actually the same age, I think. Roughly the same age. He traveled to America. He arrived in Philadelphia in 1777. And within 27 months, the American Revolution started. So he had no combat experience, and he was only 20. But nonetheless, he was appointed a major general in the Continental Army. And he actually had a lasting friendship with George Washington, who was later the president, but at the time he was the main guy of the Revolutionary War. So I think George Washington didn't have any children at the time, or if he ever did, I don't know, but he kind of became a surrogate father to Lafayette. So really and truly, like, in the show we see that Lafayette and Hamilton are really close, but they don't really show that closeness between him and George Washington. You really have this feeling like the closeness, kind of the middle man with Hamilton. That's not the case. Apparently, Hamilton and Lafayette, fun fact, lived together at one point. Like, they were roommates. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But anyways, once the war was done and won, which, of course, like I mentioned, he helped with, he returned back to France in February 1779, so like right after the war was done. And he worked with American emissaries, whatever, Benjamin Franklin. So he worked with Benjamin Franklin, ever heard of him, and John Adams. John Adams as well, who was the second president, and apparently didn't do a good job, according to the show. But anyways, so he worked with them. He would later work with Thomas Jefferson as well, before Thomas Jefferson left France and went back to the States. Fun fact, Thomas Jefferson never was a part of the Revolutionary War. He was in France. So there's that. So, as I was mentioning before, we were talking about the fact that he kind of was advocating for the monarchy, the French monarchy, to kind of still stay in power. So the person, the king at the time, was King Louis the XVI. I don't know what number that's supposed to be. Roman numerals never worked out for me.
Keep going, I'll do that.
You'll do it. Thank you. Yeah. And he was also married to Marie Antoinette. Both of them.
16?
Thank you. Yeah. So both King Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette, despite being protected by Lafayette, eventually was captured by the people who wanted to kill them, and they were beheaded by guillotine. So if there's a line in the show, which I never caught on to, because I actually just recently realized, oh shit, he was killed by guillotine, I didn't know that. Is there's a line in the show where Alexander Hamilton is like, should we take his head out and ask it? His head's in a basket, like, should we take it out and ask it? And I'm like, oh, I missed that. But anyways. So yeah, he tried to help with that, but unfortunately didn't go good because they were both killed. Anyway, he would go on back to the States. Trying to remember exactly when that was, trying to find that piece of... Yes, so in 1824, he did go back to the States. And yeah, he was welcomed back with practically open arms because he was seen as a war hero. He was seen for the reason that they had their... America had their freedom. It was because of him. And he was opened back up with open arms because of it. And he actually went to visit George Washington's grave because he had already passed on by that point. He went to go visit Thomas Jefferson, who was 81 at the time and was sick. No mention of him visiting Alexander Hamilton because he would have been dead by then too, but no mention of that. But yeah, that's what he did. And then also it said Lafayette became the first foreign citizen to address the U.S. House of Representatives, which he did on December 10th of 1824. So that's a pretty big deal, I'm assuming. Though I don't think a lot of people are able to do that. And then on the other side of things, which I don't understand why, I want to know why things like this happen, because I'm like, he's long dead, y'all. He can't... This means nothing. But in 2002, Lafayette became the fifth person in U.S. history to be granted honorary citizenship. When he's dead, I can't really use it. But I guess I don't even know if any family could use that. Like any people, any of his family members who came after him. I think you have to be like a child, in which his children are dead too. His grandkids are dead too. Mm-hmm. They're all dead. So I just don't see the point. But anyways, if you are curious, if you want to pay your respects to Marquis de Lafayette, by all means you can, because there is a statue of him. So the memorial statue was erected in 1891 on the southeast corner of Lafayette Park, which I think I find out exactly where... I think it's in D.C. I think it's in D.C., but... Similarly, the bronze statue portrays the Marquis de Lafayette petitioning the French National Assembly for assistance to the Americans in their fight for independence. He stands on a marble pedestal facing south, wearing a military uniform and carrying a sword. On the south pedestal face, a bronze female figure symbolizing America turns toward him and imploring lifts a sword. So it's actually... I can see that, and it's actually really cool. But I do have a picture of the statue, yeah. So we'll post that as well. But I think that is pretty cool. And I also have a picture of Marquis de Lafayette himself, so I'll post that as well. Moving on to the next... Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So moving on to the next person, kind of sticking with somewhat of the timeline of the show, is... Hercules Mulligan, who is another person who was involved heavily in the American Revolution. He was born on September 25th, 1740, in the UK. He died on March 4th, 1825, in New York. He was 84. If you want to pay respects to him, he's buried at Trinity Church Cemetery, which I think a lot of people were actually buried there. He had kids, he had a wife, her name was Elizabeth Sanders. They were married up until the death, I'm assuming, based on the timeline. But, I think the biggest question is, like, did both Hercules Mulligan and Alexander Hamilton know each other? Because I think, again, not necessarily everybody actually knew everybody, not exactly everything went the way it was portrayed, but during the 1770s, they were close friends. I got this wrong. I said that Marquis de Lafayette lived with him. Incorrect. My bad, guys. Mm-hmm. He was actually Hercules Mulligan, who lived with Alexander Hamilton. So they were close, obviously. And a lot of Hamilton's beliefs when it came to the revolution came from Mulligan. So he kind of came in really having these thoughts, I guess, and it was kind of put on to him by Mulligan. But apparently, another fun fact, Hercules Mulligan saved George Washington's life. And here's how. So after hurrying the officer from his store, so I guess a particular British officer, Hercules immediately dispatched Cato, I don't know what that means, to alert Washington of his impending capture. So I guess this British officer yippity-yapped to Hercules Mulligan, also because he probably thinks, oh, you have like a British accent, you're probably from the UK, I can trust you. So he yapped, but not realizing he yapped the wrong person. So the British had actually learned of George Washington's location and were actually planning to ambush and capture him, and I guess ultimately probably kill him. And Hercules Mulligan is the reason that didn't happen, so it's pretty cool. So as we kind of know, again, Hercules Mulligan was involved in the Battle of Yorktown, which was the last kind of big battle that happened before the British surrendered. So what happened to him after that? So after the war, Mulligan returned to being a tailor, because he was actually a tailor prior to being a part of the revolution, which he would continue doing for the rest of his life. He was a spy, as we kind of know again from the show. He was a spy who worked with the British and brought back information to the Americans. Actually, Cato, I mentioned Cato before, he's a person. He was actually a slave. Interesting, but he was a slave. Nothing is known in terms of what happened to Cato, but it's believed that he probably was freed after all of this happened. I think I pretty much covered a lot about him, so I'm not going to go through much more, I think, on him. So I think that's okay. Pretty much on him, just kind of going through it. Again, I have pictures of him. I'll have those up as well. All right, so for another person, and I'm going to shift it over to the women of the show a little bit that we didn't get really much closure. I don't know about anybody else. But the particular person, Peggy Schuyler, who is Alexander Hamilton's, one of his sister-in-laws, we didn't get any closure on her. We kind of go from the first to the second act and we're like, what happened to Peggy? Well, I'm about to tell you what happened to Peggy. Didn't go good. So her full name is actually Margarita. I love that so much better than Peggy. But she was married to Stephen Van Rensselaer III. I'm not sure if this was actually family, because when I looked at her parents' names, which was obviously Philip Schuyler, for those again, you know the name from the show, her mom's name is the same last name as this guy's.
Interesting.
Ugh. Times were different, y'all. Times were different. But she had three children, which only one of them survived to adulthood. And he was Stephen Van Rensselaer IV. Anyway, as we know, her parents' father, Philip Schuyler, was an army general or whatever. And then her mom's Catherine Van Rensselaer, whatever. Again, can't say the names, is what it is. She has three siblings, and not just two, which again, we never hear about this person in the show either. So we have Angelica Schuyler, which we should all know, Elizabeth Schuyler, again, we should all know, and Philip Jeremiah Schuyler. She has a brother, y'all. They have a brother. Why didn't we hear about the brother? Anyway, so that is that on that. But basically, Peggy, she was affected by an illness in 1799. She got sick, and her condition worsened very quickly, and she died on March 14th, 1801. Alexander Hamilton actually happened to be in Albany during the time of her death, or illness, and then subsequently her death. And he actually sent a note to Eliza, Elizabeth Schuyler, which stated, "On Saturday, my dear Eliza, your sister took leave of her sufferings and friends, a trust to find repose, whatever, and happiness in a better country." She was initially buried in the family plot. This is not what he said. This is what I'm saying. She was buried in a family plot initially at the Van Rensselaer estate, but then she was later reburied at the Albany Rural Cemetery. So that is what she happened with her. If you need a little bit of refresher, Peggy was portrayed by Jasmine Sepes Jones, I think that's her name right, in the show. She's great. She's been part of the show from the very beginning when they were first on, off Broadway. She's been a part of this for a really long time. And she also plays Maria Reynolds, who we're not going to be talking much about today. Because y'all, when I was doing my research on this show and I got into the affair of it all, my goodness gracious, I was scandalized. I was clutching my pearls and I'm like, we're going to talk about this later. Because it reads like
is it not terrible, or is it surprising?
I'm surprised at some stuff because not everything is portrayed obviously in the show, but it goes so much deeper, and there's certain things that I found out that is not again portrayed in the show. Because I guess we don't want you hating Alexander Hamilton too much. But it kind of came out of him saying, that jerk. I would have killed him if I was his wife. But I'm not going to go too much into it. Might go a little bit, but not too much. Because I want to save it. Oh, man. Yeah. Let's just say.
Yeah.
Whoa. But again, I do have a picture. I have a picture of everybody that I'm mentioning here. I think Peggy Schuyler looked so cute. She looked cute. So, yeah, it's basically with her. Another person I wanted to kind of quickly talk about was Theodosia Sr., not Junior. Theodore, I'm gonna spoil this to you a little bit. Theodosia Junior will be discussed next year in the series, because again, she deserves to be highlighted. Unfortunately, we don't even know what she went through, but we'll talk about it, but she went missing. So I really do want to highlight her. But what I will say, so I'm going to kind of go ahead a little bit here. Theodosia Burr Jr., she, like I said, went missing at a very young age. We don't know what happened to her. Obviously, she's dead now either way. But obviously at the time, they didn't know where she was. And she died very young, I think 24. And she had a young son. They think her husband might have done it, but we don't know. And then Philip Hamilton, who is Alexander Hamilton's son, his oldest son, died in a duel, I don't really get into much here either. But he did die in a duel. And in the show, there's a point in the show where both Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr, the actors, are singing to their children, talking about wanting to protect them from the dangers of the world, and they're going to be just so amazing in this world. They have so much life to live. They're basically singing a song to their kids, talking about wanting to protect them from the dangers of the world, and yet the dangers of the world got both of them. There's so much.
So basically,
go ahead.
They were sheltered, basically, I would say.
I wouldn't say they were sheltered, no. I would actually disagree with that. I don't think they were sheltered. And again, you have to remember the differences with being a woman in the 1800s mm-hmm. versus being a man in the 1800s was very different. Were sheltered. What I would say is these are both two parents wanted to create this world for them. They've fought for this new world for them and wanting them to just do all amazing things as they can in this world and talking about wanting to protect them in this world. But then they both, one died for sure and was ultimately murdered. We will talk about it later on, but he was murdered. And then the other one, we're not sure what happened with her. But nonetheless, she did go missing. And it's watching him and me knowing that story, because I knew that already. I knew about his daughter being gone missing. I knew about Philip Hamilton being killed. And I'm watching this and I'm like, eek. Not how it went. It didn't go good with that either. So it was actually very incredible kind of having that knowledge and being like, you can't protect your kids from the dangers of the world because look what happens. But anyway, Theodosia Sr., back to her. I found out while watching this play, I'm like, oh, my girl was married to a British officer and was having an affair with Aaron Burr during the Revolutionary War. That's a bit of a problem. Because those are opposite ends of the spectrum at the time. So I was very curious. I'm like, well, then how did that happen? Because they got married. I knew they did. And I'm like, that would have been the talk of the town if these two like got married when she's married to somebody else. Right?
Right.
Well, don't worry, guys. Her first husband died. Then she married Aaron Burr, like, that same year after he died. So his name, if you're curious, if you want to know, his name was Jacques Marquis Pervos, and he died in 1781, so right after the war ended, maybe a couple of years after the war ended he died. She has a lot of children. She has children from her previous marriage, and she has the one, Theodosia, with Aaron Burr. If you want to pay your respects to her, she's buried at St. John's Burying Ground. It's a horrible name of a horrible name. Anyway, I have pictures of, there's like a picture or something, of painting of some sort of her and Aaron Burr. They look happy, I guess. Just really awkward. Her husband died of cancer. So my guy was dying of cancer, and here she is getting snuggly with Aaron Burr. Oh man, not much has changed, has it?
Yeah.
Not much has changed.
Crazy.
I know.
Crazy.
I'm like, girl, your husband is dying of cancer and you're over here having sex with Aaron Burr.
Wow.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess you can't help who you love, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's in a terrible way, you like.
Yeah, well, again, this is this is why I love history, because I'm just like, right. Oh, like scandalized, because I never knew that. I never knew she was married before, and he was literally helping her have an affair. I didn't know that. That was amazing. But moving on from Theodosia Senior, because I don't know much else to say on her. The Continental Congress, which again is something that was mentioned in the show, it's a Continental Congress And it seemed to me that the Continental Congress was kind of against the Revolutionary War. You know, if you remember in the show, there's a particular person in the show who's thinking about, you know, don't listen to these people. Don't listen to the American people who want to start a war. Side with the UK and the British, and I should say more so the British. Side with the British. They're the right ones in this situation. Well, the Continental Congress was a series of legislative bodies with some executive function for the 13 colonies of Great Britain and North America, so that's why. And the newly declared United States before, during, and after the American Revolutionary War. So they did continue on once America's like, get out. This is our country. Get the heck out. But one of the people, again, because I didn't mention the name yet, of the one person that we kind of hear from in the show very briefly, was a man named Thomas Seabury. And he, if you remember, he said, "He not the rebel who screamed revolution." Yeah, that's him. So Seabury was one of the signatories of the White Plains protests of April 1775. So he was around before the war actually happened, but against all unlawful Congress and committees, and in many other ways, he proved himself a devoted loyalist. He wrote the Free Thoughts on the Proceedings of the Continental Congress in 1774, which is kind of some of the words that were used in the song on the show, was from this. One thing that was said in this, because it's way too long, I cannot read all of this. If you want to read this for whatever reason, again, it is called The Free Thoughts of the Proceedings of the Continental Congress, 1774, written by Thomas Seabury. So here's part of that. This is what it says. "You have taken some pains to prove that would readily have been granted you, that liberty is a very good thing and a slavery a very bad thing. But then I must think that liberty under a king, lords, and commons is as good as liberty under a Republican Congress, and that slavery under a Republican Congress is as bad, at least, as slavery under king, lords, and commons. And upon the whole, that liberty under the supreme authority and protection of Great Britain." So because basically what he was trying to say is, sure, there's slavery, but you know, slavery is not going to be any different if we stay under the British monarchy as it would be if we were not under the British monarchy. How about we just get rid of slavery and be done with it? But again, tis the time. But I do have a picture of Mr. C.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
What you said about slavery.
Just get rid of it all. We don't need it. But anyways.
Yeah.
Moving on past Thomas Seabury. Hi, everyone. It's just me, Tanika, coming in to make just a quick little correction. So I talked about Thomas Seabury, who was involved in the Continental Congress, but he is not the person that we hear from in Hamilton. The person we do hear from is Samuel Seabury. So I'm going to do just a quick little synopsis on Samuel Seabury so that, you know, this makes a lot more sense because I screwed up. So Samuel Seabury, he was born on November 30th, 1729 in Groton, I hope I said that right, Connecticut, and he died on February 25th, 1796 in New London, Connecticut. He was the first bishop of the Protestant Episcopal Church, I believe. I think I said that completely wrong anyways, in the United States. Seabury was educated in medicine, interesting, at Yale University. Go on with your bad self. And the University of Edinburgh. So he also then traveled to Edinburgh's in Scotland, right? That's where he traveled to. That's pretty cool. After he became a priest in 1753, he served parishes in New Brunswick, I'm assuming over here in Canada, New Jersey, and Jamaica, okay, New York, and in Westchester, New York as well. He also practiced, I think Jamaica Queens. And he also practiced medicine, like I mentioned. He became known for his comprehensive and eloquent pamphlets urging Americans not to seek independence. There we go. From the British Crown. He published anonymously under the name A.W. Farmer. I feel like I've heard that name before. His first pamphlet entitled Free Thoughts on the Proceedings of the Continental Congress. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Which was published in 1774. Immediately evoked pamphlets in reply by the young Alexander Hamilton. Seabury was a loyalist during the American Revolution, which drew much ire and led to a brief imprisonment. The suspected author of the controversial pamphlets, he was taken to New Haven and publicly paraded and humiliated. That's horrible. His farm was later ransacked and his son was beaten. That's horrible. Shame on you, people back then in the day. Seabury then managed to move with his family to British-occupied New York City. So he did kind of find a somewhat safe place to go to. Not sure why he, like, what happened when he died. I mean, he was an older guy anyways. He probably would have been roughly in his 70s to 80s. So, you know, I think he possibly just died from old age. But that's the information on Samuel Seabury. But yeah, I'll take you right back into the episode. There's a mention of 32,000 troops in New York Harbor. Now, is that number accurate? Well, there was 32,000 troops that entered New York Harbor, which started the Revolutionary War. So on August 22nd, 1776, New Yorkers heard the cannon blasts at the Battle of Long Island. 5 days later, 32,000 British troops showed up with 10 ships of line, 20 frigates, I think I said that right, and 170 transports defeated Washington's troops at Kips Bay and invaded Manhattan Island. So they came in. America was not prepared for 32,000 people, troops, to come in and raid them, basically. They were prepared and they won. The British were winning throughout most of the Revolutionary War, until the Battle of Yorktown. It went really bad really quickly.
Yeah, they were killing it.
They were. Unfortunately, yes, because they actually were killing people in the process. But yes, they were. So in terms of, like, how did George Washington hear about Hamilton for him to be then employed by him? Because I was wondering, like, y'all didn't have, like, cell phones back in the day or Facebook or something. How did you guys know about each other? So on January 25th, 1777, the Pennsylvania Evening Post posted an advertisement that said, quote, Captain Alexander Hamilton of the New York Company of Artillery, by applying to the printer of this paper, may hear of something to his advantage. This basically referenced General George Washington's decision to invite Hamilton to his military staff. So that's basically how it happened.
Basically, I thought, you know, one cup in one ear, the other cup in the other ear. You know?
Right? But that's the thing. I was like, but they did it through a newspaper. Hey, person, hoping you read the newspaper. But, So, there's one other funny thing that happened in the show in terms of, which, Lin-Manuel Miranda, it's not true, because the thing is that they say that Martha Washington, who was married to George Washington, named her feral tomcat after him. And Lin-Manuel Miranda says, that's true. It's not true. There is no tomcat for her to have named it Hamilton or Alexander or whatever. She never had a tomcat. So we're here to defunk it. There is no tomcat. So if you're curious as to when Eliza Hamilton and, well, Eliza Schuyler first, before she turned into Hamilton, how did she meet Alexander Hamilton? And you're just, you know, again, how does that happen? Well, 1780, Eliza actually met Alexander while she was staying with her aunt in Morristown, New Jersey. He just happened to be in the area. He had met her, and nothing kind of came from that at first, until they went to, just like they show in the show, they went to like a party of some sort, and that's kind of, I guess, where it flourished. I don't know. They did get married in 1780, so yeah.
Just go back to that tomcat. You said tomcat. I just searched to see if Tom and Jerry is related to this.
Are you serious? No, tomcat is just a cat.
Yeah,
it's just a cat.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Tom and Jerry. I was like, oh, okay, so it has nothing to do with it. Go on.
No. So. Yeah, so they believe that's... Actually, no, I'm incorrect here. So 1780, I think, was the time of the, like, when they met at this party or whatever. But they actually had met previously in 1777. Because if you think about it, here is Alexander Hamilton working on George Washington's staff. We have Philip Schuyler, who's Eliza Schuyler's father, who also was a part of the war. Philip Schuyler and George Washington were friends. And Alexander Hamilton and George Washington were very close. So I think they must have somehow met that way, and nothing really came from it in the beginning. But that's kind of roughly when they think it could have happened. And again, this is Alexander Hamilton, we have to remember, had nothing to his name. He was an immigrant. Let's not forget that he was an immigrant. He came from like a Caribbean island. I can't remember. Again, I cannot remember which one. But he had nothing to his name. Only reason I think he was able to marry Eliza was because Eliza had... She wasn't in the same place as like her brother, who is a man. I think Angelica, at least based on the show, is the oldest. She had to marry wealthy and keep that name kind of going. Which again, I also was thinking about it too while I'm thinking about this. There's literally mention in the show that Angelica Schuyler, which I'm about to defunct in a minute, Angelica Schuyler can't pursue Hamilton because she's the oldest. I have to keep that name going. My father has no sons. Incorrect. I just defunct it. He had a son. They had a son. But nonetheless, Angelica Schuyler was actually married at the time that Eliza Schuyler met Hamilton. But that doesn't mean that things weren't happening behind the scenes. At least some weird fascination between both Angelica and Alexander. I don't think he had an affair, y'all. Just not with his sister-in-law. With someone else completely different. But you'll have to wait for that one until later. So, yeah, that kind of just hit me, and I'm like, wait a minute. Just inconsistencies throughout the whole thing.
Right.
But, yeah, that's basically how that kind of happened. Just kind of skipping through here, so I don't talk about every little thing, but if we remember from the show, Battle of Monmouth was a complete and utter disaster. Just disastrous. So, the main person who was involved in the Battle of Monmouth, he was appointed the head person from Washington was Charles Lee. Mm-hmm. We did briefly talk about Charles Lee when we were talking about John Lawrence, because if you remember, John Lawrence and Charles Lee did duel each other, in which case Charles Lee was shot during the process. He wasn't killed, but he was shot. Mm-hmm. And so what did Charles Lee do at the Battle of Monmouth? Well, if you remember from the show, not a lot, a whole lot of nothing. So this is kind of unknown right now to the American camp at the time. By the time of his return, sorry, I'm going to start over because I'm confusing myself. This was unknown to the American camp at the time of his return, and Lee was reinstated at his previous rank after everything, because if we, again, Charles Lee was talking shit about George Washington after this happened. Like, he talked some shit, but he still got to go back to whatever his previous rank was. But Lee returned to the field and led to the advanced guard at the Battle of Monmouth on June 28th, 1778. Lee's attack was disorganized, and the ensuing confusion resulted in the retreat of the American advance guard. So they could have had a chance to win at the Battle of Monmouth, honestly, I think, from what I've gathered. They could have done really well. Unfortunately, they couldn't, because Charles Lee was like, I don't know what to do. Basically, how they portrayed on the show was like, you know, George Washington kind of screaming, okay, everybody attack. And you have Lee kind of like, retreat. And then Washington like, attack. No, retreat. And Washington's like, what are you doing? Like, we're supposed to be fighting. And Charles Lee's like, but there's too many of them. You're in a war, sir. There's going to be quite a bit of people on the other side who's going to hurt you. Like, but it's not like...
You want to make sure you have all your men. All your men to...
Yeah, like you...
Side.
Yeah, but I'm like, you have this battalion that you're supposed to be instructing. And you're basically telling them,
yeah,
no, I don't want to fight. I'm really scared. Okay. So how many people died in the Battle of Monmouth? I mean, it seemed like it was like a shit ton of people, but I guess in the circumstances of the Americans not having a lot of bodies already as it was in comparison to the British, this is a pretty huge number, I guess. And it was 109 people were killed at the Battle of Monmouth, 161 wounded, 140 missing. British, on the British side, 207 people were dead, and 170 were wounded. So, still a lot, but, so, if you want to know, you know, what happened to Charles Lee after the horrendous Battle of Monmouth? Well, he formally resigned in 1780 from the Continental Army and retired to his estate in Virginia, and he was never heard from again because he died from a fever while visiting Philadelphia in 1782. So he died literally 2 years later. That's so sad. He probably died, I mean, I don't know if the fever and his gunshot wound were connected. They probably were to some extent. But yeah, he died of a fever in 1782. Poor thing. I feel bad for you. Moving on. So apparently, and I love this. I love this. Let's talk about it. There was a woman, y'all, who was the hero of the Battle of Monmouth. Now, if you guys know, women didn't fight in wars. They just waited back at home for their men to come home. That's all they did. They didn't
so
do.
They, so they, so you weren't like, you know, nurses?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. There's not much mention about that. Maybe we'll have to do a little research later on to see if there was, but this. But she wasn't a nurse. She was not a nurse. This is it. So, her name is Molly Pitcher, which she was a nickname of a woman. I don't even know if this is a real name, but she was a nickname of a woman said to have carried water to American soldiers during the Battle of Monmouth on June 28th, 1778. Before taking over for her husband on the battlefield after he was no longer able to fight. She's just like, hold my beer. I'll do it. Amazing.
That's a hero.
Yeah, I know. Again, why not talk about that? Like, I think it's incredible. There was like a woman who's like, let me do this because you can't, so I'll do it.
Incredible.
So I agree.
Hi, me coming back in again. Just to give you a little information, because I did some side googling while editing the episode. So to answer Mikkel's question on whether or not women were nurses during the Revolutionary War, the answer is simply yes. Women often follow the troops hoping for safety, food, and a chance to work. Some of those women worked as nurses. So there you go. That's the answer to that question.
So, again, I think I'm still on the Charles Lee thing. Yeah, I am. So, again, if you remember, I just said to you before, Charles Lee talked a lot of shit about Washington. So, on June 30th, after protesting his innocence to all who would listen, because he liked to talk, Lee wrote an insolent letter to Washington in which he blamed dirty earwigs from turning Washington against him. Claimed his decision to retreat had saved the day and pronounced Washington to be guilty of an act of cruel injustice towards him. You retreating saved the day? Should I go back to the numbers? You didn't save the day. You probably made things worse. Anyway, I have a picture of this fucking guy. Don't worry. For y'all to look at. And then basically what won the day, like I mentioned, was the Battle of Yorktown. And that happened on September 28th, 1781, where the British surrendered. I think the Yorktown started on September 28th, ended on October 19th, 1981, at exactly 10:30 a.m. when the British surrendered and said, "I'm so good. You win." So yeah, that's basically what happened there.
That's a cocky statement.
Yeah.
They said that?
Well, yeah, they're like, they basically waved a white white handkerchief, and they were like, "We're so done. You guys win."
Oh, okay.
That's basically, yeah. They didn't actually say win. They were like, "We surrender." Right.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So.
I seen that in movies and all that stuff. Like, yeah. They just wave the flag.
Mm-hmm.
That thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. So if you're curious on knowing, because again, I'm not going to be really talking about presidents at any time. If you want to know more about them, by all means, go do your research. But Thomas Jefferson, if you want to know, really, was he really the ambassador to France? Well, he was. And he was the ambassador to France between 1785 and 1789. So I'm not even sure if he was ever in the States during the Revolutionary War. But he didn't fight in it. That's for sure. He definitely didn't do that. Did Hamilton and Jefferson hate each other's guts? Oh, they really did. They really hated each other. To the point where George Washington literally had to go to them and say, "Children, stop it. This isn't good. Like, you have to stop."
Do you know why they hated each other, or just like, you know?
I do. I think it's somewhere in here. I feel like it kind of came up for no reason, honestly, because they actually liked each other initially. They actually liked each other, and all of a sudden they just didn't. It was weird. I think it had to do with Hamilton's debt plan. Because again, if you've seen the show, you know there's the talk about the debt plan. I have to get my debt through to Congress, which was when the affair happened, y'all. But that's when, like, that was kind of coming up. And it wasn't until then that things started to shift between Hamilton and Jefferson. I think basically these were two men who didn't trust each other.
they just didn't trust each other. Mm-hmm. I think that's all it kind of came down to. Yet the person who Hamilton would turn to help him with this was Jefferson. So it's interesting. They didn't like each other. Jefferson, I think, was a little bit more of a quieter force. Hamilton was, y'all, let's not mince words. Hamilton was a narcissist. And he was egotistical. Because he would kind of go around kind of being like, my administration. It wasn't his administration, it was George Washington's administration. You're working for him. But he had this air of him like, I'm the best. Which I've learned that pretty quickly. I'm like, oh, he sucked. He really sucked, y'all. So yeah, that's basically how it happened. And because Jefferson was friends with James Madison, and James Madison didn't really like Hamilton either, as we kind of saw through that, even though James Madison helped Hamilton write the Federalist Papers. So it's just boys being messy. That's basically all it was. His boys being messy. So like I said,
that's a hot mess right there.
A hot mess. They hated each other so much. But yet again, when Jefferson decided to run for president alongside Aaron Burr, mm-hmm. Hamilton endorsed Jefferson because Jefferson has beliefs, Burr has none. So, and just like in the show, well, I'll be damned. No one expected that. So I'm just going past my notes here on the scandal that is the affair, because I'm holding on to that for another day. So good. So good. It's full of drama and politics and sex. It's just so, so good. So I can't, like, I have so much to say, and I'm not going to leave it because it's too much. But what I will tell you about them, James Reynolds is the husband of the woman who Alexander Hamilton has an affair with, Maria. He was born on March 30th, 1768, died on March 25th before his birthday. That's a damn shame. On 1828, he was 59 years old. He has one daughter, Susan Reynolds. So there's kind of that. If you want to know what happened to Mariah Reynolds, well, in 1793, Maria enlisted the aid of Aaron Burr. Aaron fucking Burr. To help her with her divorce with James Reynolds. The man who would later shoot Hamilton dead is the man who helped Maria Reynolds get a divorce. Wow. That's something. So good. Did Eliza burn the letters after the affair happened? Y'all, she did. We just don't know why, but she definitely did. She burned them letters that her husband gave her. Oof, so good. If you remember at the end of the show, there's like the literal end of the show where Eliza kind of gasps at the end. And you're just like, what is that for? Now, I know, Mikhail, you don't quite understand because you haven't seen it, but basically what kind of happens is she's kind of singing about the different things she achieved. I do want to preface that I'm going to be talking about her in a separate episode, but she lived another 50 years after he passed away, or after he was killed.
She was healthy.
That, but it's a completely unusual to see someone live that long in those times.
Yeah,
she outlived her sisters, her son, for God's sake.
Like, so what was the average age in her family? I would say,
I think Peggy. You know, I would have to go back and take a look. Peggy was young when she died.
Yeah.
Angelica,
I'm not sure how old Angelica was, but she died about 10 years after Hamilton died.
Mm-hmm. So basically all of them were around, like, I would say, I'm just going to...
Probably around 50.
Oh, 50. So not 30s, 40s. Cause
no.
That was,
okay. Peggy was 30. I want to say 34. Oh, I'm guessing that, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess Angelica was about 50.
Okay.
And then Eliza, she was in her 80s.
Hi, me again. Coming in with some more information on the life expectancy during the 1800s, which is when Eliza passed away. So the life expectancy for men and women kind of born in 1800, so this still would have been kind of before her time, because obviously she was in her 30s at the time of 1800. Usually the average lifespan for men would have, or I think the life expectancy for either men or women would be between 61 and 64. So 66 for men, 64 for women, which is interesting because usually women live longer. Maybe that's now, maybe not so much then. But by 1810, this had dropped by 3 years to 63 for men and 61 for women. So that's the answer to what the life expectancy usually was around the 1800s. So with that kind of being in mind, that women usually live to about 61, Eliza Hamilton lived to be 97 years old. That is insanity. That is amazing. So yeah, that is, because I said 80s for Eliza, but that's incorrect. She was 97. So that's amazing. But anyways, that's enough of me kind of dropping into the episode. You're not going to have these drop-ins. This is the last one. I'm going to take you right back into the episode,
which is completely unusual at the time.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
People were probably calling her, like, you know, a witch, you know?
I don't think so. She was high level society, and she did a lot of great work after his passing. Yeah, right. Yeah. She was high level before she met him. You know, he married into a good family.
Interesting. Okay. So, go ahead.
But the reason Eliza gasps and cries, so this is actually coming from the actress who plays her. She says the gasp is actually from her realizing that this whole time there has been an audience witnessing the story, but not just any story, it's her story. Y'all, when I read this, I started crying. I'm not kidding you. That whole scene when you kind of, I missed it. I wish I caught that, but I didn't, because I thought it was like, oh, maybe she's doing that because Hamilton, like, she's now passed on. She's seeing him. But then what I thought was odd in the end is that he holds her hand, but then he lets her go. I'm like, why is he doing that? Because then that doesn't make sense then for what my theory was. But I kept realizing throughout watching the show, I'm like, this is not Hamilton's story. This is not, let me rephrase, this is not Alexander Hamilton's story. It's called Hamilton. But I think we've missed the mark. It's Liza Hamilton, not Alexander Hamilton. This is her telling her story. And that's beautiful in and of itself. So when I read this, I'm like, and there we go. That just kind of wrapped it up in a little bow for me. Because it's incredible. Like, that scene, it's bone chilling. But even more so, it's just like, it's not this heart. And I love that. But... if you want to know, did Eliza know about the what we call the Reynolds pamphlet, which, Mikkel, so you have context. Basically, the Reynolds pamphlet was Hamilton admitting to his wrongdoing with Maria Reynolds, and he published it himself, and we will get into why he literally outed himself. We'll talk about that later on.
But in, so it's, I don't know, in 17. Okay, I'm going to tell y'all now. This is when I'm like, my pearls clutch, because I would be pissed if I was her. In 1797, while Eliza was pregnant with their sixth child, so y'all, they're fucking. It's not like he's not a happy man, but yet he still had to go and cheat on his wife with Maria Reynolds. That just kind of goes to show it doesn't matter what you do, ladies, men suck. So she was pregnant with her sixth kid while he's off doing what he wants to do. Initially, she didn't believe the gossip. People were gossiping that he was having an affair, and she didn't believe them. Because of course not. Why would you want to believe the man you love, the man you've been married to? I think at this point, 1997, nearly 20 years. They've been married for 17 years. They have six kids. How would you ever, or about to have six kids, how would you ever think your husband would do that to you? So of course she didn't believe them. But eventually, you know, all of those doubts that she had were refuted by her own husband when he put the Reynolds pamphlet out there for the whole world to see.
Right.
So.
Interesting.
Gross, men suck. Anyway.
Yeah.
So the other... Go ahead.
We build, so...
That was the whole thing. Because again, I don't want to get too much into it without like getting too much. There's so much more to the story, anyways. But
right.
why he did that in the first place is because people within the administration, within the government that he worked closely with, thought that he was committing treason using. The kind of sense of taxpayers' money to send money off to James Reynolds because he was being extorted. And
not surprised.
And they thought that he was committing treason. And he's like, no, I'm not committing treason. This is what's going on. Here, I have the proof. Whatever proof he could give, obviously, at the time. But he had proof. And those people were like, okay, to say anything, because Jesus, we're not going to say anything. But turns out that someone did speak to somebody else, who then that person to somebody else, and it got out there. So then he decided, I would rather have my marriage crumble, basically, and have to repair my marriage than have my legacy and what I stand for go to ruins. I worked too damn hard to be where I'm at. And his reputation was more important to him than his marriage. So that's why he did it.
Wow.
Like I said, y'all.
That's crazy.
Alexander Hamilton is not that great of a guy. Like I respect him in the hustle and where he got to in life. He's a founding father, even though he's not like a president. But he's considered a founding father. He worked damn hard to get to where he could have. He was near death back where he was from. He almost died multiple times. If it wasn't illness, it was potentially a hurricane. Right? So he almost died. When his mom died, his cousin died, committed suicide. He had nothing. And this man achieved so much. But I had respect to for him in that sense.
Maybe he just had like way too much pride, and you couldn't.
I think I do agree with that. I think so.
Yeah.
Because if you're going around claiming my administration when it's not,
right?
That just goes to show the kind of person he was. Full of himself is the term to use. So the other thing that I want to mention is the farewell address by George Washington, which solidified the precedent of only having two presidential terms. He's the reason that we have that, is George Washington. He carried out 8 years as president. And he's like, you know what? First of all, you and Jefferson are the reason that I'm about to do that. I'm kidding. But he decided, I don't want to do this anymore. I think it's time for me to go. And I do have the original, like, there's a photo of the address that was printed in a newspaper. It's so cool. So I might be posting that, but to kind of give you an idea of what was said. And y'all, don't sing when I start saying some of these words, because it's kind of straight out of the song in the show. So, or I should say, this is all kind of in the song. So, Washington informed the American people of his retirement in a public letter that would come to be known as his farewell address. James Madison, who was president at some point, I think after Jefferson, he actually wrote the first draft of this in 1792, when Washington actually contemplated retiring then, but he didn't end up retiring because due to the French Revolution, he ended up staying in power during that. And then when he decided, okay, this is it, I'm done, I'm retiring now, Alexander Hamilton took over and rewrote the address. So in this song, when this is being sung, this particular address, both Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, the actors are singing the song together. But what's again is so beautiful is, even though Alexander Hamilton wrote this and he's singing it, he kind of fades a little bit in the background, because you hear him, but he's fading back in the background, because I may have wrote this, but this is George Washington's address. So it was, again, it's just kind of hard for me to explain that unless you watch it, but it's right. It's really well done. So yeah, he did that, and he kind of said things like, having done his best to assuage fear, Washington then offered his final counsel to the people as their president. He stressed the importance of the union that bonded all Americans together and provided for their freedom and prosperity. He reminded them that the independence and liberty the nation currently enjoyed were the results of the common dangers, sufferings, and successes they had experienced together in the American Revolution and early years of the Republic, to safeguard their hard-won system of Republican government and a federal union. The country had to remain united. He cautioned against three interrelated dangers that threatened to destroy the union: regionalism, partisanship, and foreign entanglements. He warned his countrymen not to let regional loyalties overwhelm national attachments. The name of American must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. At this time, many Americans primarily identified with their state or their region, but Washington reminded the citizens, which never changed despite what George Washington said here, not to allow such detachments to divide them, lest designing men convince them that differing local interests made the union unworkable or unnecessary. In particular, Washington feared that geographic identities would serve as the foundation for the development of political parties. Indeed, this process has already begun with the emergence of the New England Federalists and Southern Democratic Republicans. While we currently view partisanship as inseparable from the American political process in the early Republic, most condemn parties as divisive, disruptive, and the tools of... I missed my place. I think I didn't catch all of that, but anyways. Let's move on past that and go into this, because this I sang along with a little bit, because I'm like, oh, okay. So, open the door to foreign influence and corruption because it weakened voters' abilities to make reasoned and disinterested choices. Rather than choosing the best men for office, the people would base decisions on ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, and so elect those in league with foreign conspirators. To avoid outside interference, Washington advocated a foreign policy based on neutrality and a friendly commercial relations with all. So,
He also, I think I'm going to end it after this, Washington concluded his address with some brief musings on his legacy. Given his 45 years of service, he hoped that his countrymen would view his past mistakes with indulgence and that history would relegate them to oblivion. He closed by expressing his anticipation of a retirement in which he enjoyed the fruits of the nation's mutual cares, labors, and dangers. One last time. That's not in the address, that's in the song, but anyways. Over the last several years, that is, the benign influence of good laws under a free government. Again, all words that are put into the song. And I'm like,
right.
Oh. So yeah. Apparently, his farewell address is read to this day. They do it on his birthday every year.
Mm-mm.
Which is incredible. I think that's really cool. They do it every year. But yeah, that's basically it on the history. Now, guys, if you want to know my favorite parts and some other things that I thought was really cool in the play, or actually the play but the show, mm-hmm. Number one interesting thing that if you haven't seen any of the interviews done by Lin-Manuel Miranda or the other cast members, this was very interesting. First act. If you remember, the end song of the first act after John Lawrence is announced to have been killed, that whole final number, it's a long number. That was as far as Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote while I was off Broadway. The second act is the newest aspect of the show, which is why it lent to confusion for me. The timeline was weird because they talk about like the Federalist Papers, the first murder trial of this here's nation, and all of, especially with the first trial, because he was a lawyer. If you remember, Aaron Burr is also a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
That did not happen until 1880. Sorry, yeah, 18. Sorry, 1800. Sorry, guys, he was dead long before 1880. 1800.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which was nearly 2 years, I think, before Hamilton died.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait, what? Because that's not the order of the thing. But I will tell you here, the first murder trial of the nation, which happened in 1800, involved a woman named Alma Sands, who was killed in December of 1799.
Mm.
That is all I'm going to tell you, because I am going to be doing an episode on her exclusively next year.
Okay.
I think, again, it's an interesting story. It's an interesting story in the sense of how male lawyers handle situations dealing with young women. How dare she have a sex life, basically. Like, that's basically... I listened to a podcast, which I will highlight when we do the episode,
mm-hmm.
where I was like, these fucking jerks. But we won't get into it any more than that. But so I thought the timeline was really interesting, because I'm like, wait, what? And then you had the fact that he's like, you have George Washington being like, they're telling me that I should be president. I'm trying to round up an administration. I need you to be a part of that. Y'all, it happened long before the trial ever happened. It happened in like 1780 or something. Or maybe not quite 1780. But anyways, mm-hmm. It was like, wait, what? It's all over the place, the timeline. But I really feel like that's probably why the reason behind that is because I don't know if Lin-Manuel Miranda anticipated this being as big as it was. And he's like, well, let's just end this off, you know, that way, and then it's over. So I thought that was interesting. Next fun tip, one fun little tidbit. The final musical number of Hamilton's, which is right before he gets shot by Aaron Burr. Lin-Manuel Miranda had a really hard time writing that number. He didn't know what to do with it. And he's figuring out, we're getting down to the wire. He needs to figure this out. He does not know what to do with the number.
Until he realizes, like, the one thing that I haven't done is silence. And in that number, there's a silence. While he's talking, like, it's very powerful, where he's kind of like, it's kind of like his life flashing in front of him.
Right.
While here's Aaron Burr, his gun's already off. It's, again, I can't explain that enough. But it's an incredible number. And when you realize that, it's like just silence. And when you listen to it again based on silence, you're just like, wow. You kind of just hear, I can't explain it. It's incredible. That I implore anyone, if you don't want to watch the show, I still implore you to listen to that last number, because it's just, I wish I could remember the name of the song, but it just really signifies probably what someone goes through when they're about to die. And just silence and having my life flash before my eyes. It's so good. But right. Then other things, if you want to know what my favorite songs are from the show, I've got a few, but not too much. But obviously, Alexander Hamilton, the very first number, is my favorite. You know, my shot. I'm not gonna throw away my shot. Oh, I love it. So good. The Schuyler Sisters, which is, again, so good. Their song is so, so, so good. Schuyler Sisters. We have King George, who obviously was the king at the time of the Revolutionary War. He comes in and out throughout the show. Every song that man sings is so good. Anyone who's seen the show will come out saying, I loved the king, because he was so good. So any song he sings, I love. Wait For It was another one that I really liked. Nonstop, which is the number that I mentioned before, was the end, was the first song, the last song of the first act. That's what the song's called. It's called Nonstop. It's so good. What Did I Miss, which is sung by Thomas Jefferson, is the first number in the second act, and it's sung by him. It's really good. There is also I Want to Be in the Room When It Happens. Basically, let me rephrase, any song that's sung by Aaron Burr, only Aaron Burr, chef's kiss. Also, the actor himself and how he delivers the songs, he's incredible. He's incredible. Like, nice. It's so good. He's amazing. So, yeah, that's another song that I really, really like. Like, and again, I've kind of, that with that song, I Want to Be in the Room When It Happens, which I think, like, if anyone remembers watching YouTube, especially here in Canada, when it was still here, that was the song they used in the ads. I Want to Be in the Room Where It Happens. And the song is really about the fact, like, here is Hamilton trying to get a debt plan through. He used the ass aid of Jefferson and then Madison as well. And it's like, okay, so we got this debt plan through. But then the capital of the states changed because Madison's like, would you like to work closer to home? Because currently at the time, their headquarters was in Albany, New York, not Washington, D.C. or Philadelphia. I think it was Philadelphia. Yeah, or Pennsylvania, I should say, sorry. So Hamilton got his debt through, his debt plan through.
Mm-hmm.
And the Virginians came out with the nation's capital. That was what the whole song's about, and it's like, it's really good. I'm trying to think of anything else that I really like, but that's kind of it, I think, are the main ones I like.
All right.
But here's what I'll say. Again, I'm going to say it again. doesn't matter what you like. I think anyone could sit there and watch Hamilton and find something that they like, even if it's one thing. So, I don't know. Mikkel, I actually think you should watch Hamilton and kind of report back.
Yeah, I probably would watch Hamilton, probably either on, you know, either on Disney Plus or, you know, live as well. So,
yeah, I mean, we can't watch it live, unfortunately. It's not here anymore. Okay. But Disney Plus, for sure.
Okay.
It's all there. And I will say, definitely make sure you can carve out about 2.5 hours. It's 2.5 hours on Disney Plus, which is, that's nothing. I was there for 3.5 hours when I saw it in person. So it was a long night. I came home being like, I'm dead. I'm a zombie. I was so tired afterwards, but it was worth it. It was worth it. And again, what I also want to say too is the actors that were the same from the original cast was the guy who played Lafayette / Jefferson, who is actually staring at me at the moment. If I have a calendar, Hamilton calendars, he's currently staring at me in the moment. He was on the show that I saw too. Both me and my mom were like, I really like him. He's really good. The King is the same as well. Who else? I think the girl who plays Peggy / Maria Reynolds, she was the same as well. Obviously, we did not have Lin-Manuel Miranda, so that didn't happen. But I think that's it. I think everyone else was different, if I remember correctly.
Well, yeah. Like I said, I'll get to... When I get the time, I'll watch it on Disney
Plus. And report back.
To you, yeah.
I will do that. I'll be asking you when we finally get into the series next year. Did you or didn't you? I think you'd really enjoy it.
I will, because I got to watch some shows on Disney Plus that I have to watch. And then most likely that's probably going to be one of the shows I'm going to be watching. I'll definitely watch it. So
that's good. Yeah. I'm gonna get unbiased, but it's good.
So this ends episode 24 of the Next Tape Podcast. The Next Tape Podcast is available now on all podcast platforms. We also have a website called solo.to/nesttapepodcasts. Where else are we at, Tanika?
We are on Facebook and Twitter at Next Tape Podcast and TikTok and Facebook and Instagram at Next Tape Podcast, then Twitter and TikTok at Next Tape Pod. There we go.
Much, yeah. It's okay. It's all right. It's all good. And we also have a contact email, so contact us at mikkeltanika@gmail.com. So we talked about Broadway.
Lots of Broadway.
Pretty much. Yeah. Is it Hamilton?
Hamilton. Mainly was the main focus.
Mainly Hamilton.
Yeah.
Like we said from the start, from the episode. If you're not interested in, you know, just like, you know, watching Hamilton, there's other shows, like she said, like Lion King. I just saw it on Mervish, Shrek, which is surprising.
Oh, I don't think that's any good. I think I heard that's not good. Yeah, I don't think that's good. I think currently Jagged Little Pill is out right now. I think Wicked is coming soon. I know the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child was here, but I think it's gone now. And then there's Six, which is about, one of the monarch's many wives or whatever.
Aladdin's on there too.
I did hear about Aladdin. Yeah, I did hear about Aladdin was coming. But yeah, there's also like small, tiny little shows that, you know, don't get as much.
The thriller, crime thriller ones. There's one with the, let me see, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, Rose, I don't know
how you say it. What's the spelling?
So it's R-O-S-E-N-T mm-hmm. and then R-A-N-T-Z.
Rance? Rosenrantz?
Rosenrantz.
Sure.
Got in, I don't know, Stern? Are Dead? Okay. That's what I got. It might be a crime thriller. So it might be, you know. Yeah. So if you guys want to watch a lot of these shows, pre-order your tickets on Mervish.com. Yeah, if you're from America, once again, go on Broadway.com to order your tickets to order these tickets into these shows. So, that's pretty much it. Do we have any updates for, you know, our next episode or, you know, in the future, Tanika? Or is that it?
So the one thing I will say, though, is if you want to do any further research on any of the people that I discussed here, definitely go ahead and do that. Because again, this was a very quick synopsis on some of the people that I talked about. We are going to be going in depth with other people in the future. You can expect that for next year. But definitely, if you want to do more, definitely do more research. That is encouraged by not only me, but the people who are part of Hamilton, the show. Do your research, because not everything was accurate in the show. But in terms of future episodes, we're going kind of back to our roots a little bit next week and doing more news type stuff. We have some crime episodes coming up very soon. We have some more bonus episodes. I think we're making a regular of it. We're doing kind of bonus episodes to kind of make sure we can keep up with the news. We have special bonus episodes coming up in April as well. But yeah, I think that's kind of what I can remember off the top of my head at the moment.
Stay tuned for that. And we'll basically, you'll be interested in that. So yeah. So I am Mikel, and...
And I'm Tanika.
And we are out until next week. Peace, guys.
Bye.